Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben. Today is September 29th, 2011, and this is podcast number 29. Yesterday, one of the things that Kai and I covered was the Occupy Wall Street protests that are going on. We talked quite a bit about that, and I thought that we had pretty much exhausted the topic. One of the major things that we were covering in that is that, or at least one of the things we tried to cover, was that as noble as the efforts may be and as many good people are down there trying their best to do what they believe is a good thing, really and truly, they're striking at the branches of evil rather than at the root of evil. They're seeing the corporate end, and they're seeing the bankers, and they're seeing the financiers, and they're seeing the Wall Street jugglers, and they're seeing all this stuff that's not the problem. They're seeing manifestations of the problem, but ultimately they're punching at shadows, and they're fighting it. They're jousting windmills, and they're setting up their own straw men to punch at, and they're not facing the root of the problem. They're not dealing with the puppet master. They're not dealing with the power behind the imagery. So I hope that we had covered that in our podcast. Actually, what, three different weeks, I think we covered the three different podcasts at three different weeks. We talked about the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, and Anonymous, and all the noble efforts that are all misdirected. Anyway, and then, let's see, Wednesday afternoon, I was trying to get caught up on some of the other podcasts that I listen to and some of the other internet radio shows and so forth that I haven't got a chance to listen to. And I was somewhat refreshed to find that some of the leaders in the Liberty Movement, as far as now leaders, the real leaders of the movement, like Ron Paul and that level, but the internet, what might be called the internet leaders of the Liberty Movement, which is, in my opinion, people like Stefan Molyneux and Free Domain Radio and the folks over at Lou Rockwell and the Free Talk Live people, Liberty Radio Network, these guys I see as the internet leaders of the Liberty Movement. They're the ones that are the voice that's constantly on the internet talking and trying to bring attention to the movement. Not so much the Bob Murphy's, the intellectual end. Although Bob Murphy does a lot on the internet as well. Very few people dress up like a zombie better than Bob Murphy. But anyway, as I start catching up on these things and I start seeing what others are saying, and I'm saying, well, good, they're saying this pretty much the same thing I'm saying. They're saying that for whatever effort and everything, that the protesters on Wall Street are simply missing the point, and they're not accomplishing even the goal that they themselves want to accomplish, because they're just misguided. And for whatever good intentions they have, it's just not going in the right direction. However, in listening to these, and I'm going to pick on two specific what I consider leaders in our movement, but I'm not going to name them specifically. If you're familiar with their work, you might recognize who I'm talking about. But there's just no reason for any of us to pick on each other openly and make a fight out of it. You know, I'm thinking of the way Walter Block took an unnecessary shot at Stefan Molyneux some time back. And that was really a blunder on Walter Block's part. And it resulted in a shot back from Stefan Molyneux, which was, necessary perhaps in defense, but at the same time, it was somewhat misguided, and the back and forth just was not productive to our movement, and was not productive to liberty as a whole. So I don't want to fall into that trap. That, you know, and it's easy. Somebody as smart as Walter Block can fall into that trap. Certainly, somebody like me can. So I don't want to just take somebody and take a shot at them and then walk away like that. Plus, I've had people, other podcasters who have named me specifically using my name and the name of our podcast here and taken cheap shots at me behind my back and then just wandered on and like nothing even happened. So I know what that's like. I know that it's not a nice thing to happen. So, but I am going to take a shot at two figures, and I'm just not going to name them. One has a wonderful presence on the internet, and I've learned a lot from this individual. And I was listening to their response to the, in kind of a question-answer interview type mode. And what he said basically was the same thing I've said, which is that these people are striking at the branches instead of the root. And then he went on to say what the real problem is that the government, it's not the Wall Street is doing this and that and the other thing. It's the fact that Wall Street is doing these things because of the gun. He always says, look for the gun in the room and pay attention to the gun. Stop looking at what this person's doing or what that person's doing and look for the gun. Now that's dead on, except here's the problem. Whenever he says this, he says the government has the gun, and the government simply doesn't have the gun. This is a misunderstanding between what is the government and what is the state. The state, yes, the state functions with the government, and the state can't function without a government. But the government can function without the state and has many times. And this particular individual has written extensively on how you can have a government without a state. And yet here he is speaking and blaming this on the government. It's not the government's fault. It's the state that manipulates the government and the market and the bankers and the corporations and Wall Street. All these things are manipulated by the puppet master, by the state, not by the government. Again, you're striking at a branch, not the root. And then the other individual who, the first one I was just now slapping at, is an anarchist and simply should know better than that. But the next one that I'm going to take a shot at is a minarchist. He's a very knowledgeable libertarian and a good, solid individual. And his thinking is like, you know, 98% solid. But in one sense, in my opinion, it's flawed. As he was discussing this same issue and talking about the Occupy Wall Street, and he was explaining why these people are not our friends, and he had some very good points in this, that these people are not our friends. Essentially, they're socialists. They may not realize that, they may not understand that, but they are socialists. And this is a dead-on point that he was making in his podcast. Unfortunately, in his solution, you see, as he sees the problem, he sees the fascism of where Wall Street has had this marriage with Washington, D.C., and this marriage between the bankers through the Federal Reserve and into the Treasury, and he sees the fascism that's present there, where the marriage between government and business produces this distorted monster of fascism. And he sees how that just zaps the productivity. He understands all that, and then he makes the statement that we need to return to the Republic. And now I wasn't intending to mock him when I said this in my the podcast yesterday with Kai, but I said many of the working class people out there are going to look at the Occupy Wall Street protesters, and they're going to say, well, them hippies need to get themselves a job. That's what they need. And that's the exact mentality that this individual took. It's like, oh, well, yeah, they're just paid protesters down there to because they're a bunch of communists, and they just want, oh, man, come on, dude, really? And so we're supposed to return to the Republic? Really? Is that the one that Washington was elected to and then immediately broke the Constitution by pushing measures through Congress to get special presidential actions so that he could have an army, supposedly to go and confront the Indians in the old Northwest Territory, where there had just been a massacre of the U.S. military? So under the guise of that, he raised an army and then took that army into Pennsylvania to attack tax protesters? You mean that republic? Is that the one we're talking about that we're supposed to return to? Are we supposed to return to the republic that within its first presidency violated the Constitution? Is that the republic we're supposed to set up on high and worship and think, oh, this, if we just return to that, things would be good? Come on, folks, we can do better than this. We really can. A third group that I want to talk about here is Democracy Now. Democracy Now! Is heavily involved in the Occupy Wall Street group. It's been accused that they are the finance behind the process. I don't know about that. I don't have any evidence of that. But other people have said that, and they haven't presented any evidence. Maybe it's out there, and somebody just hasn't shown it to me yet. Democracy Now! Is a communist group. What they see the problem, okay, let's go back. The first guy I was talking about, the anarchist who is philosophically on solid ground, but he just blames the government. He sees the state as the government when he points the finger. Then we have the next gentleman who I referred to as a minarchist who wants to return to the public. He sees the fascism and he wants to return to this idyllic republic that he imagines once existed that never actually existed. The folks at Democracy Now! See the same fascism that he saw. They see that same fascism, and they see how it's destroying the market. They see how it's destroying middle America. It's destroying the poor people in America by devaluing their dollar. They see all that, and their solution is they want communism. Now, here's the problem. Whether we're talking about a return to the republic or whether we're talking about a shift to communism, we're still talking about socialism. Now let's break away from this rant for just a second and let's take a look at what is socialism. I'm over at Wikipedia. Now, a lot of people will slam Wikipedia because sometimes it's inaccurate, and that's true. The bad thing about Wikipedia is that it's adjustable. The good thing about Wikipedia is that it's adjustable. Okay, so we have a myriad of geeks out there who have nothing better to do in their life than make sure that everything on Wikipedia is accurate. And they debate endlessly to make sure that that's the case. When Wikipedia has been compared to other encyclopedia sources like Encyclopedia Britannica and I can't remember the other one. Anyway, Wikipedia has either equaled or exceeded the written encyclopedias on accuracy. So you can slam Wikipedia all you want, but I would say, well, you know, first, show me where it's wrong. Now, then again, since Wikipedia is wide open to the public, it has to adjust itself to pretty much everybody, so it can't just make attacking statements. It has to be somewhat politically correct. So if we look at Wikipedia and we look up socialism, here's the beginning line. It says, socialism is an economic system in which the means of production are either state-owned or commonly owned and controlled cooperatively, or a political philosophy advocating such a system. Now, without going into, let's consider Wikipedia's discussion of socialism the way Wikipedia might discuss the word worm. I didn't look up worm in Wikipedia, but I'm just using this as an example. Let's say you're going to define the word worm for Wikipedia, and it was up to you to write such a definition. Well, a worm can have a wide variety of things. A worm can be a segmented bodied creature who crawls through the ground like an earthworm, ingesting actual stuff in the dirt and you know, doing what earthworms do. A worm can also be something like a tomato worm, who is certainly has almost no similarity to an earthworm. As a matter of fact, a tomato worm has legs, so how can we even refer to it as a worm when it has legs? So we consider all these things when we talk about the word worm, but to give an accurate definition, you would have to cover all of these aspects of what the word worm could cover. So in dealing with the word socialism, Wikipedia also has to do the same. So it goes through every aspect of what is considered within this giant umbrella that's called socialism. But it all boils down to this same thing. It's an economic system in which the means of production are either state-owned or commonly owned and controlled cooperatively, or a political philosophy advocating such a system. Now let's think about this for a minute. What is the means of production? Well, if you think about what the means of production, what does that mean? Different people have tried to explain this in different ways. Karl Marx put quite a bit of effort into it. He would be someone who would know something about socialism. And he put quite a bit of effort into discussing it as labor, the subjects of labor, instruments of labor. But let me put it a little easier for you. Let's take this back to a libertarian view of what the means of production is, because this gets back to libertarian views on homesteading. If you're going to produce something, you have to have a raw material of some kind. But you don't have to produce something. You can be providing a service, which is just as legitimate as producing something. So if you have a service, you still have to have labor from an individual. So you have to have raw material, you have to have labor, and you have to have effort, you have to have plan, you have to have design, you have to have organization, you have to have a goal. And many of these are very slight variations of something that was already stated within the same categories, but all these are separate aspects. And so once you get the actual effort, the actual labor is put into it, the actual materials that are used, including things like time and space, pretty much anything that's produced must be produced in space. It's going to take up space, and even if it's a service of some kind, space is required for that service to take place within. So you have this thing that we're going to call the means of production, and it's very much based on what the libertarian would refer to as property rights. Somebody has to own the time involved. Somebody has to own the effort involved. Somebody has to own the property, the raw material that's being turned into the sellable good or the tradable good or whatever, or the consumable good, whatever is to be done with this ultimate product. So the means of production, you don't have to get wrapped up into an economic point of view to understand that it's all those things together, and it's also all those things separately. So now, in order to draw a picture in your mind, so that you can see that's better than my simple words at trying to explain the means of production. Think of a picture on a wall. Think of a wall. Let's first start with a wall. Think of a wall. Just imagine a wall. A wall with a picture hanging on the wall. And this is a good sized picture, okay? Now imagine the picture hanging on the wall. Now within this picture, you're going to see a number of things. Something that you might see in the picture is, let's say, a home, a house, a home. A home representing a place where you can stay and live and raise your family and own property. It is real estate, it is property, it is your home. So there's a house in the picture. In addition to the house, you also have another building, and this is representing a schoolhouse. It doesn't mean you have to go to school to be educated, but education basically is the thought. So we have a home and we have education, whether that's provided in an official school or whatever the atmosphere that's provided in. Imagine in this picture you see these two buildings. One is an actual home where let's say it's like an idyllic little house with a little smokestack with little puffs of smoke coming out the top. It's a perfect little cottage, we'll say. And then we also see the schoolhouse representing education. That's in this picture. And as we look at this picture, we also see other things. We see, let's say in this picture we see a fruitful tree. Let's say it's an apple tree. And on the ground below it is a bushel basket with some apples in it. And then another thing we see in this picture is, let's say we see a market. Let's say we see a vegetable stand. There's a guy with a scale, and he's weighing out produce, and there's a lady there with a kid, and she's purchasing the produce from him. And let's say, since we're talking about a lady with a child, let's say in this picture we also see off to the side, there's a doctor, and he has just delivered a baby. So there's a doctor holding a baby. And now also we happen to see some, let's say we see some coins, some money. There's some coins in this picture. And we can place these, since you're making this picture in your mind, you can place these anywhere in the picture that you feel comfortable seeing them. So we've got a home, we've got a school representing education, we've got an apple tree with apples representing farming and production, we've got a marketplace showing trade going on, showing commerce, we've got coins and money representing some kind of form of exchange that makes it more convenient than dragging a chicken to the market every time you start to go to the market. We've got a doctor delivering a baby. The doctor had to somehow learn his trade. So we have, let's say we have another guy with a little podium, and he's got a book on the podium, and maybe he's holding one of those old-timey ink pen feather things. And so maybe he's a professor, or perhaps he's a writer, or maybe he's just a philosopher, or maybe he's just a poet. He's writing at his podium. Now we also see, we have to have some means of transportation to get stuff from one place to the other. So let's imagine a ox cart, or let's make it more modern. Let's say there's a truck. Let's say there's a nice big semi-truck that can carry produce from one place to another. Now, all these things are in this picture. This is a big picture. We also see some other things. Let's say we see a guy in uniform with a pistol on his hip, and he has a star on his... He's got a nice little uniform or a costume with a funny little hat, and he's got a star up there on his hat. So let's assume that he represents law, civilized law. Not necessarily, you know, the bad ideas of a cop, but he represents what we must have in civilization in order to keep peace and order, and that's some kind of civil authority. And then we have another guy who's dressed in a different kind of uniform, and he could be like, let's say he's some type of an officer of some kind, perhaps a military officer. All this is within the same picture on that wall. And on another part of the wall, we see a factory of some kind. Maybe it's off in the distance, but there's a factory, and it can produce things that don't necessarily come. We already had the apple tree, so the factory can produce things that don't necessarily come from the farm, textiles or plastics or whatever. And of course, there would be a church in this picture as well, off in the distance, perhaps, or maybe it would be more central. It's according to how you draw the picture in your mind. It's your picture. You can draw it any way you want, or you can imagine it any way you want. Now that you have this picture in your mind, let me ask you a question. What is socialism? Well, remember what I read. I said, socialism is the economic system in which the means of production are either state-owned or commonly owned and controlled cooperatively, or a political philosophy advocating such a system. Now, let's think of that picture one more time. Who owns that house in the picture? Because that house is a means of production. You cannot produce services and goods without having some type of a domicile, some type of a place to go back and rest your head. It's a part of production. What about the schoolhouse? The schoolhouse, without proper education, whether that has to be in a schoolhouse or not, is not the point. The education could take place in the home. The education could take place in the factory. The education could take place at a variety of places. But the schoolhouse in our picture represents the fact that there has to be some form of education, even if it's self-education. And is that education not a means of production? What about the apple tree? Certainly the apple tree and the farm that it represents is the means of production. And what about the store owner, the shop owner who is selling or trading or whatever method that has to happen in order for the goods to get from the farm into the hands of the lady and her child, that even though it's some might call it a middleman or whatever, it's still part of the production process because the produce hasn't been consumed until it gets to the end user. So that marketplace is part of the means of production. Okay, well, what about the doctor? Well, certainly healthcare, medicine, all those aspects are part of the means of production, because if you're not healthy, you're not producing as you should be or as you could be. And if you're dead because you didn't have medical care, certainly you're not producing anything. So medicine is a part of the means of production. Now, what about the philosopher or the writer or the poet that we talked about at the podium? How could that possibly be a means of production? Well, without ideas, without concepts, and without thinkers that are going outside of the norm of what is what they see around them, without the imagination of writers, the production would never advance any further than it is. So you have to have thinkers and people who imagine and invent new things and describe new things and inspire others to think of new things. So that's what the guy with the podium is. And he's a part of the means of production. Now, what about money, capital, that evil thing the socialists hate so bad? Well, you have to have some method of exchange. And this is the flaw in socialism that has been pointed out by Mises and by others, that they don't have a way to determine price, therefore they have no price mechanism, and I'm not going to get into that. But you have to have some kind of exchange. And you have to have some method of transportation. That's where the truck comes in, or the ox cart, or whatever you drew into the picture in your mind. You have to have some method to get the stuff from one place to the other so that it can be consumed and so that other products can be produced. Well, how about law enforcement? How is law enforcement a means of production? Well, if you don't have a series of laws and a way to enforce laws, then you allow criminal elements to interrupt the process of production. So, therefore, without some mechanism to keep law standardized, then you have interruptions in the means of production. So, law becomes part of the means of production. What about military? Well, if you're dealing with foreign invaders on a regular basis, you're not getting a whole lot of things done, are you? You can't really grow a lot of those apples in your field with the apple trees if you're having to deal with your field being bombed by your neighboring country. So, the military provides security so that we can have the means of production. And, of course, remember there was a factory in our picture as well. The factory, of course, is part of the means of production. Now, any one of these things... Oh, I forgot the church. Usually, the church is not considered part of the means of production. I'll make that argument in a minute. Now, if you can imagine this picture that we're talking about, there's one thing that I didn't tell you to imagine, but it's probably in your mind already. When you look at the wall, don't just look at the picture, look at the picture on the wall. You see the whole wall, and you see the picture on the wall, and you see the house and the school building and the tree and the marketplace and the doctor and the guy with the pedestal, the philosopher or inventor or poet or whatever we called him. We have the truck for transportation. We have a pile of coins for representing money or a means of exchange. We have a cop. We have a soldier. We have a factory. All these are in the picture on the wall, but what did I tell you not to imagine that's already in your mind? It's the frame around that picture. I didn't tell you to imagine it, but I'll bet you didn't imagine a picture without a frame. Did you imagine a picture just stapled to a wall, or did you imagine a picture with a frame? You see, that frame is socialism. Now, you could reach into this picture and pluck out any one of those items that we discussed, and it would still be a picture of the means of production, and it would still be within that frame, which is socialism. Okay? Socialism can, even if you plucked out almost all of those pictures and left one or two in there, within that frame of socialism, you'd still have socialism because it's within that framework. Socialism is that which seeks to control the means of production. It doesn't have to control all the means of production all the time, but it seeks to control the means of production. And if it can get away with one of those means of production, or two, or three, or four, as many as it can, and that's where the church comes in. Oftentimes, socialism does not seek to control the church as a part of the means of production, but oftentimes it does. Now, let's take this discussion in a little bit different direction. What is the state? Okay, let's go back and ask Wiki what the state is. If we look up the state in Wiki, we have a very interesting set of words that they use. Now remember, Wiki has to be politically correct, but they try to be as accurate as possible. Wiki says, that's Wikipedia if I didn't make that clear earlier, sorry about that. In the social sciences, a state is a compulsory political institution that maintains a monopoly of legitimate use of force within a certain territory. All right? Now, that's Wikipedia's words. That's not my words. The funny part about that that strikes me is it is a monopoly, it maintains a monopoly of the legitimate use of force within a certain territory. If I recall, Barack Obama actually used that phrase during a campaign stop at one point in time, and I was kind of shocked. I thought, oh, he actually admitted to that. Well, it's not that unusual, because he's an educated man, and he knows that that's what the state actually is. Max Weber gave us a really good definition of the state. He said that the conception of the state, in Weber's view, the state is the entity that claims a monopoly on violence, which it may therefore elect to delegate as it sees fit. The state holds a monopoly on violence through the control of law and political philosophy. Now, in Weber's view, the state held this monopoly on violence, and because the state held that monopoly on violence, it was legitimate. The anarchist disagrees. The anarchist says, upon what do you base the legitimacy of your monopoly on violence? Why do you have the monopoly on violence and not the Bonanno family or not the Crips or the Bloods? How is your monopoly on violence more legitimate than any other particular gang of thieves and thugs? Now, if you go over to badquaker.com, you will see across the front, you know, when you see across the front of badquaker.com, there's the list of old, ugly old men. And then right below them, where it says, one of these is not like the others. And then below that, it says, home, FAQ, that's frequently asked questions. We had a lot of fun with that. About Bad Quaker and definitions. Now, if you click right there on definitions, and you scroll down to a list of words, property, anarchy, chaos, free market, leadership, etc., go down that to where it says the state. And I'm going to read my definition of the state that I have there on badquaker.com. The state, definition of the state. The state is the entity that exists when a government turns tyrannical. Governments can exist without a state, but the state cannot exist without a host government. A government is a collection of people, whereas the state is the entity that possesses a government when it begins to act in a way that assumes it has ownership over people and or property. Now, if we go back to Wikipedia's definition of state, and you scroll down to where it says several things, definition, types of states. Eventually, it will say the state and government. Okay? Now, at that point, let me read what Wikipedia has to say. The concept of the state can be distinguished from the concept of government. The government is the particular group of people, the administrative bureaucracy, that control the state apparatus at a given time. That is, governments are the means through which state power is employed. States are served by a continuous succession of different governments. Now, that's saying similar to what I said, but in a different way. There is a very distinctive difference between the state and the government. Governments come and go. The state lives on. Governments can be voluntary, or they can be not voluntary. A family unit can be a voluntary government. It can have a voluntary head of that government that the family members recognize as the head of that government voluntarily. But when any form of government decides to use aggressive force, theft, lies, then it becomes the state. Now let's take our thoughts back to that picture on that wall. In your mind, the wall with the picture. Now forget everything I said about the frame being socialism. Look in that picture. Take a good hard look in that picture at all the things you see. The home, the private property of the home, the place where people live and function, with the little smokestack coming out of its little, or with the little smoke puffs coming out of its chimney. We have a school, we have commerce going on, we have a farm with the apple trees, we have a doctor holding a baby, we have money, a means of exchange, we have transportation, trucking, we have philosophers and artists and poets, and we have police acting to bring about law and order. We have military providing protection from foreign aggressors, and we have factories producing goods. Now, when you think of this picture and you think of that frame around it, in this setting, that frame is the state. The state is the entity that uses violence to control a geographic area, including the government. It uses the government to control a geographic area through the means of violence. Take away the frame, and everything in the picture remains. The church is still there, the home is still there, education is still there. All the means of production are there without the frame. But when you set the frame around it of the state, all of a sudden, everything within that picture is controlled through violence, through taxation, and through lies or deception. Now, when socialism is the frame around that picture, there is no private ownership of any of these things. Any of these things can be taken for the good of the masses. Any of these things can be taken for the good of the frame. And when that frame around it is called the state, all of these things belong to the state. You may think you have ownership over this or that, but ultimately the state has ownership. The state owns the house you live in. The state controls the education. The state controls the commerce. The state controls the production. The state controls the medical industry. The state controls trucking, and the state controls financing and police and military and the factories. The state controls these things. And if the state doesn't control all of them at a particular time, it's only because the state hasn't got to that point yet. But it always desires to control all the means of production. That's what the state wants. The state desires to control the means of production just like socialism does, because the state is based on the philosophy of socialism. So that when the gentleman I was referring to earlier is complaining about the banks being supported by the government, he's wrong. The banks are controlled by the state. The government is controlled by the state. And when the other gentleman was desiring for fascism to cease and us to return to the republic, what he was actually desiring for us to return to was a more simple version of the state. But ultimately, no matter how far you shrink the state back down, no matter how little that dragon is, it's still the state, and it will still always desire to grow back and obtain those things, those means of production. It always has that driving desire. So if you shrink the state down to an acceptable level to you, then all you are is a slightly less socialist than the other socialist. And now the last thing I want to wrap up on this is I want you to understand how, when you face these things, when you see these things, how do you spot them and recognize them and allow your mind to go past all the fluff and all the smoke and mirrors and everything else that we're seeing, the protesters on the street, the banks doing their evil, the banksters up in the balconies looking down, drinking their champagne, the Washington, D.C. doing nothing about it, the mainstream media ignoring it. What do you do when you see all these things? And the answer is you go back to first principles. Now I'm going to jump back to Wikipedia one more time for this, and I'm going to look up first principles. First principle is a basic foundational proposition or assumption that cannot be deduced from any other proposition or assumption. Now I'm going to give you an example for that, the example that they use in Wikipedia. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. Now, the last claim is deduced from the first two. All men are mortal. That's a principle. Socrates is a man. That's a principle. Socrates is mortal. Well, if Socrates is a man, and if all men are mortal, then Socrates is mortal. So Socrates is mortal is the if-then of the previous first principles. So we look at the first principle. The first principle is something that cannot be deduced from something else. All right, now, let me give you some examples of first principles. One. Each animal is born with specific natural boundaries or laws. These natural laws are unique to each species. Violating natural laws produces a less successful life. Following natural laws produces a more successful life. So the principle is each animal is born with specific natural boundaries or laws. So for instance, if you have a wildebeest, wildebeest don't fly. It's just not part of their nature to fly. So if a wildebeest is on a cliff and decides, you know, I need to get to the other side of this wash, I think I'll just fly across this cliff and fly off this cliff over the wash into the other side of the wash. And he leaps with all the belief in the world. It is not within his nature to fly. So it is not in his best interests to attempt to fly. And he will not face the best future after he has jumped off the cliff, because he has violated his own natural laws for his species. So each animal is born with specific natural boundaries or laws. Okay, two. All legitimate human rights can be summed up in the zero aggression principle and the right of property. Now, that may not be completely obvious, but this is a first principle. All legitimate human rights can be summed up in the zero aggression principle and the right of property. Socialism, in any form, violates the zero aggression principle and the right of property. The state, in any form, violates the zero aggression principle and the right of property. Think back to the picture. Under the idea that the frame is socialist, who owns the house? The community owns the house under socialism. Or the greater good of mankind owns the house in socialism. Who owns the tree with the apple on it? In socialism, the greater good of mankind owns the tree. In the state, we're supposed to believe that it's the greater good of mankind, but it's still the state. And under socialism, we're supposed to believe it's the greater good of mankind, but you know what? Oddly enough, it still ends up being the state, because socialism won't work without a state. So, in the picture, the apple tree is owned by the state, and your home is owned by the state. You don't believe your home is owned by the state? Stop paying property taxes. Stop paying the state to live in your home. See how long it takes them to come and get you and take you out. Resist them. A man is king in his own castle. Really? Resist the state when they come out to collect their taxes. They will either arrest you, haul you, put you in a cage, take away everything you own, or if you resist hard enough, they will kill you. Because they own you. They own your life. Your life does not belong to you within the framework of the state or within the framework of socialism. You are an object owned by the state if you live within that frame. For humankind to succeed, it must return to the laws that govern the species. And those laws are the zero aggression principle and the right of property. The state in any form and socialism in any form violates the zero aggression principle and the right of property. They have to violate the zero aggression principle in order to take your property. So for humankind to succeed, it must return to the laws that govern the species. Mankind must remove man as the lawgiver, and mankind must place that which made man back in the position of Most High. Then, and only then, can the species heal and true prosperity can be achieved. For more articles and podcasts on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com, and thank you for listening.